Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. Tonight, we get to discuss what I think may prove to be a somewhat controversial topic. Many people know that a series has just started on ABC television called Blind Justice, which features as its, quote, question mark hero, question mark, unquote, a gentleman who is blind and who uses a dog guide. And one of the questions that was raised last week is, what has been the impact of this program on people's attitudes towards blind folks? And perhaps in a broader sense, how are blind people perceived by the media these days? Have things changed? Have we actually made some progress? If we have, what kind is it? If we haven't, what ought we to be doing? And by the way, should we be outraged by blind justice? So, to begin with then, why don't we just go around and see, for those who have watched one or more episode of Blind Justice, what people's reaction to the program is.
This is Alice Richard from Brunswick, Georgia, and I've caught a couple of the episodes. In fact, I have the recorder set to record it this evening. I thought some of it was good. I'm still swishing my hair, though, trying to see if I can hear my hair on my collar. I thought that was a little funny. I too, parts of it, it's just hard for me to imagine actually a cop still carrying a gun and pointing a gun like he did in the episode a couple of episodes ago. But I thought some of the stuff with the dog was pretty good, and I actually enjoyed last week when he intentionally knocked the drink over on the woman and said, whoops, and the point was made, well, that was on purpose, and that's why you did it. So I thought that was kind of a good point.
This is Rachel in Orlando, and I had a couple thoughts about that, too. And like Alice, I'm not sure what to think about the gun situation. I mean, you want to kind of think realistically, you know, and you don't want him to be portrayed as some sort of Superman or superhero because he's blind. And I only watched the first episode. I actually have a tape in the VCR right now with last week's, and we're recording tonight's. But on the first episode, there was one instance where he, I believe it was with his partner, detective, and he was being a self-advocate and, you know, saying to her what he needed. And I remember, I believe, one part where he said, no, I'll take your arm. You know, we walk like this, and kind of demonstrating sighted guide. So I was kind of happy to see that, to where it portrayed a blind person as knowing what they need and being able to communicate that to the sighted public.
Having not watched the show yet, I would assume that it's only been on 2 or 3 weeks. Does anyone know how it's doing in the ratings?
Well, I don't know. I hope it's doing good in the ratings. This is Gary Wood in Lansing, Michigan, by the way. I think it's a good show. I don't see how realistically a blind person could be a policeman. But I don't know. That's just my opinion.
May I comment on a movie that I had watched some time ago?
Sure. Go ahead, Danny.
I don't remember the man's name, but it was something like Tom Sullivan or something like that. And to me, he was portrayed as some super guy who was always using his lack of vision to get his way with this woman, you know. Now, I'm not saying he did anything wrong or anything, but I'm just saying that to me it portrayed people, you know. The trouble is that a lot of people out there, when they see one blind person or any person of any group, a person with a small mind will think, all of them act that way, which is terrible.
I don't know if anybody's noticed, but there has been a lot of media of blind. I was just reading a bunch of books by an author called Baynard Kendrick, who wrote about a World War I veteran who was blinded and became a detective. And that was in a book called, Duncan MacLean was the character. And while it was very weird in many respects, I have to admit it was kind of fascinating to look at the technology of the day by book. And it was interesting that in that respect, because it wrote between the 30s and the 50s. And so that was it wasn't terrible for the day, I think, but it wasn't really good either.
Well, you guys are fascinating. First, I'm intrigued by the number of us who have not seen Blind Justice. This program is audio described or video described, and interestingly enough, the video description is sponsored by Window Eyes. If your local television station has a SAP channel that is prepared to use, then you can actually get an audio described version of the program. However, Miami has the SAP channel, but is not broadcasting the audio described version. So I'm surprised at the number of people who haven't watched the program, but I'm also surprised at the relative calm with which people have received what I guess I think is an immensely unrealistic portrayal of blind folks in all sorts of different ways.
Hi, Paul. The website, I believe, is realeyes.com. I'll go check that out, but I believe that's the name of it.
I guess my problem in not watching certain shows is I just don't keep up with current network TV anymore. The only shows I tune into maybe are PBS, if that, and some TV Land, but that's about it.
I'm like you. I don't keep up with TV. I really don't, but I will go watch this. It's on the on that website, so I'll at least watch the first. We don't get video description on our main channels here, so I won't be able to see the audio part. But I don't know. I'll have to reserve comment.
Hi, this is Brian from Boston, and I watched all the episodes so far of this program, Blind Justice, and I'm curious, Paul, can you give us some examples of when you thought it was grossly inaccurate?
I'm curious, Paul. I've seen some things where I thought they were inaccurately done, but I thought some of it was good, so I'm curious to hear what you think was grossly overdone.
Well, let's talk about two specifics. One of them is that this is a guy who is maladjusted to his visual impairment. I mean, that is absolutely clear. It comes out in his interactions with his superior officers. It comes out in his interactions with other co-workers. It comes out in his interactions with his wife. And while I think it's fine to suggest that a blind guy who may be a Superman on the one hand can be maladjusted to visual impairment on the other hand, I don't believe for a minute, and I don't think it portrays something appropriate, to say that the cops would cut a maladjusted blind guy enough slack to allow him to stay on the force. The fact is that any police officer who was as maladjusted as he was, whether he was visually impaired or not, would have been relieved of duty and sent away, period. It's sending a bunch of double messages. So that's one example, and maybe I should stop and see if Brian wants to comment on that.
I'm curious. I probably know over the years maybe a dozen police officers, and at least three of them I would consider majorly maladjusted. So I'm not all that convinced that a maladjusted blind guy is an unlikely scenario under those circumstances. I will grant you that I don't think there's any police force that under any kind of rule of law would allow a blind police officer to be toting a loaded weapon at any time. But I certainly can imagine a police force having a blind officer in certain kinds of duties. And I certainly don't think that this show ever portrayed that the police department welcomed him back with open arms. It was certainly much more a case where he forced his way in through lawsuit.
Well, that's the interesting thing. This is Gary and Lansing again. I really think that, maladjusted might be the thing, they're saying. But I mean, I don't know if this is double speak, but I feel that he did have a problem adjusting to his blindness. It seems like he just his attitude seemed to me to be that he had the trouble adjusting to blindness. I don't have described DVS for CSI, but I kind of like the show, except for a lot of action that goes on. But and then I like the Without a Trace, and I like another show that I record when that is on tonight, Judging Amy. That's where it's a kind of a quandary for me. I stand with ACB that all shows should be described, and I think that's good.
I'm curious. Let's see. As I understand the storyline, this guy is blinded in the line of duty. His partner freezes in fright, and it leaves this guy in a vulnerable position where he took a bullet for the team, and it ended up blinding him. Between that event and when the show starts, he has gone through the rehab system sufficiently to come away with a guide dog. And I know of very few guide dog schools that would issue a dog to somebody who hasn't got some significant blindness skills, so I think we can all come up with one or two that fit that mold. But the fact that he's not adjusted, I think, adds some authenticity to the whole thing. The fact that he's struggling with his marriage after becoming a person with a disability, I think, is very much in keeping with what the statistical realities are for marriages after one member of the partnership become severely disabled in some fashion. The jealousy between the wife and the over the guide dog, I think, is another example of some real reality. So I'm curious, how do other people feel about those things?
What you say could have a lot of validity. I never thought about it quite that way. I've got a theory about why older shows have better dialogue, because right when television was starting and you had programs such as I Love Lucy and the like, producers were so accustomed to writing for radio that they were used to writing good dialogue. Whereas now you don't have that. People care far more about the picture.
Well, I agree with you, sir. I think that's the case.
This is Alice, again, in Brunswick. And I'm like Brian. I think the fact about the maladjustment, to me, there are blind people who are out in the workforce nowadays that I don't believe are totally adjusted to their blindness. And I'm like Brian in watching the show. I certainly didn't think they welcomed him back with open arms, and I think that comes through in his attitude. And he is defensive about it. I just think that's so realistic, and even the relationship part. Now, what I am curious, though, because it did seem like, and I missed the very first episode, I didn't see it, but I get the impression from the episodes I've seen that he was having affairs before, and it'll be interesting to see if that comes into play now, too, or if they decide that as a blind man he wouldn't carry on with affairs.
Yeah, that's a very interesting program, but it's not realistic, I'm sure of that. I mean, I don't think that it can happen. I mean, but neither is the shows that we used to like to watch, those of us that are old enough to remember, like, of course, Superman definitely isn't realistic, or the Green Hornet wasn't, and Lone Ranger may not have been, and some of these other shows, of course, Wonder Woman, Spider-Man.
Alice and Brian, let me suggest to you that the difficulty with the image that's being portrayed, whether it's realistic or not, is that what the general public will take away from this is, geez, I don't want a blind guy working for me. My God! I mean, this guy antagonizes everybody around him. Jesus, blind people are like that. Man, I don't want anything to do with them. Jeez! The second example that I would give was at the beginning of last week's episode, and it concerned what happened to him when he left his apartment and crossed the street with his guide dog. I don't know whether what it was intending to say was that he was ill-trained, but it certainly didn't portray the relationship between person and dog very appropriately or very effectively. And again, stereotypically, I don't want your help, is the kind of response that he has when someone tries to help him legitimately. And a lot of guys, a lot of the sighted folks out there are going, yeah, that's what those blind people are like, man. Boy, not only are they awful in terms of getting along with their fellow employees, but man, they're just mean and rude. Jeez, I don't want anything to do with those people.
I think what you're saying, Paul, is that you want a script that shows what we would perceive as a perfect blind person. Such doesn't exist. Blind people, even those of us who are born blind, do get angry. And we do get, you know, and we do get discriminated, and we are discriminated against. All of that stuff is there. Are you saying that we need to portray a bigger than reality, a bigger than life blind person in media? Is that what you're saying?
This is Alice. Paul, I missed, I couldn't really tell because I don't have audio description. I have satellite, and even though I have SAP, I've yet to been able to figure out when there is audio description on a show, how to get it to come on. I've tried turning on my SAP and stuff, so I wasn't real sure what happened then, but I will say I was a little surprised because I assumed that the dog made a mistake in crossing the street, and I thought, well, he sure didn't correct it very well for that, so since I couldn't really tell what was happening, it's hard for me to say. But to answer your other question, you know, you're right. What does it say? And it gives people, but I'm the idea that, ooh, are blind people this way? But I'm here to tell you, there are a lot of blind people out there that are that way, that are downright nasty when somebody comes up and tries to help them. And sometimes when I'm out there, it embarrasses me because I'm thinking, you know, the way you're telling this person you don't want help, they'll not go up and maybe help the next person they meet, and just because of the way you've been. And I mean, I've seen that happen when I've been with people, and it just, you know, it makes me want to crawl in a corner and say, ugh. Because, you know, who knows, maybe somewhere down the line I might want their assistant and they'll be twice as hesitant to help me. So I can see what you're saying, but I still think that's somewhat realistic about what happens out there in the real world.
Another thing to keep in mind in all of this is a television series. I hope we see the characters continue to develop over time. So the fact that in the first episode, he was struggling with his coworkers, he was struggling with his wife, he was struggling with all aspects of life, seems to me that was just setting the stage for a whole series of storylines that can be developed over the course of the, 15, 16 episodes that are already in the can for this particular series. I know blind people like this guy. I find it more likely you're going to find a macho character, a person who was macho prior to blindness, having this kind of struggle than somebody who was, you know, a behind-the-desk kind of person. So it doesn't surprise me at all to find this kind of portrayal of a character. I do find that there are some times when maybe my hackles rise a bit. And there's a metaphor for you. Hackles rise a bit when I see some portrayal of a guide dog team relationship that I'm uncomfortable with. While there was that incident, and I didn't have audio description at the time, so I can't tell you exactly what took place, the part of the relationship with the guide dog that has that disappoints me at this point is so many times when he gets out of the patrol car with his partner to go do an interview, he leaves the dog in the car while he goes in without a dog on the arm of his partner. I certainly can understand how a smart blind policeman may choose to use their dog in certain environments and not in others, such as when you're at a crime scene and there are trace evidences around that you don't want to disturb too much. You might think twice about using a guide dog in that environment. But I don't think that's the case when you're taking a dog, when you're going in to do interviews of witnesses, etc., etc. And I was disappointed that the one time that he did bring the dog into that environment, he used the dog to get on the good side of a little boy who was trying to coax out of telling the truth about his dad having killed his little brother.
You know, I was always told by my parents you're going to have to be twice as good in order to prove you're just as good. Goodness, I used to hate hearing that. But there is a grain of truth to it, and it's sad, but we live in that kind of world that can judge every member of a particular group by some first impression. I've got to say that I'm sure that when people first saw Archie Bunker on All in the Family, it might have been tempting for some people to think, gosh, people from Brooklyn or wherever he was from are horrible people, you know. I would hope people out there will have enough sense to know that, first of all, it's a fictional television show, and second, that people can be jerks simply because they're jerks, not because of being handicapped.
This is Jesus. Again, saying that I have not seen the show, what I'm hearing from you guys, especially from what Paul said regarding him being a jerk, sort of disturbs me only in the sense that I see it as what I am starting to realize from society in general, and not just about blind people, but about dealing with disabilities in total, that the attitude has seemed to have shifted over the last 10 years to the attitude of these disabled people have gotten everything they want, and every day they want more, and we're sick and tired of it, and we're not about to go any further. The portrayal of him as a jerk, sort of, in my opinion, feeds into that, if that is in fact the way he was behaving. And as Brian said earlier, if this is not the beginning of a whole series of stories that might build into something else, which is also part of the reason why I asked the earlier question, does anybody know what the ratings for this program are or may be?
We have to, I suppose, examine ourselves in the sense of how we accept help from other people and how we respond to it if we don't really need the help.
I would like us to hearken back to two instances in the past. Some of us who have been involved in ACB for a while, I know Brian will be aware of this, we'll remember that the Council of Citizens with Low Vision within ACB was extremely upset when the movie Mr. Magoo came out, because in their view, it absolutely misrepresented the abilities and competencies of people who were partially sighted. When Mr. Sunshine came along, the NFB essentially got it taken off the air by suggesting that it was inappropriate to make mock of poor blind people. And yet, here we have a program that is making a mockery of adjustment to blindness, of rehabilitation, of everything that is real about blindness. Hold on, I'm going to cough, but I want to talk once more. So don't jump in quite yet. And to speak to Brian and Alice's point about, and I guess several of the people's points about the way that I am characterizing this person. No, I don't want a perfect blind person. I want a realistic blind person. What we have here is a stereotypic media created notion of what a maladjusted blind person would do. It's one stereotype after another. It's one exaggeration after another. And maybe it will develop into a more realistic situation, but I don't see it happening, because I think the intent here is to create a combination, a Superman with feet of clay that isn't realistic, it's stereotypic. And what I'd like to see is a person who, sure, he makes mistakes, but he's honestly making substantial efforts. You know, what I see with this guy in the episodes that I've seen is... he really is very macho. He really doesn't make any effort to communicate with anybody. And I'd like to suggest to you that really isn't very realistic. He demonstrates abilities that a newly blinded person would never even think of, far less demonstrate. It's just not real. And it's not close to being real. And it is so stereotypical that, in my view, it is doing far more harm than good.
Well, I wonder a little bit about that with the two episodes I've seen. Especially the latest one where he does seem to have this negative. Well, I don't know if negative attitude is a strong word to use, but trouble adjusting to blindness. You know, it just whether it's right or not, and it does sound like that could be stereotypical. But whether it's the right categorization of it, it just seems that's what it is. He's having trouble adjusting to blindness.
It seems that anymore the media makes shows that don't build things up but rather tear things down. And also there's the problem in our society of what some people have called hypermasculinity. In other words, an artificial macho cover that some men are portrayed to have, instead of people having the whole range of emotions in a healthy balance. And I think that if this show is what people say it is, I think that it would be doing, that it is doing a lot of harm. You know, one time somebody saw me at the piano picking out a few chords. You know, I can't play very well at all. And someone said, "Are you trying to be Stevie Wonder?" And I said, "No, I'm not trying to be anyone." You know, they see one famous person, good or bad, and they want to, some people want to pin you down to that category, whatever it may be.
Paul, I guess you and I are destined to disagree on this one in a major way. Let's see, in the first episode, the main character, in looking at a automobile that they were sent off to double check, he thought he smelled cordite in the vehicle, and he thought that might mean that vehicle was part of a crime scene rather than just a car that was parked in the wrong place or something along those lines. I was a little worried he was going to have superhuman senses. And then in the next episode, I can't remember if it was the next or the one after that, he's in the backyard talking to his partner about the interview they just conducted with the couple of members of the family, and he smells something, says, "Are there any flies around here?" And that kind of stuff. And he said, "Oh, I smell it." And there's all this tension about the body of the missing boy was buried in the backyard. And when they dig it up, it turns out it's the family dog. So I think that they're going both directions, as is appropriate, between when he correctly uses his senses to when he incorrectly uses his senses to do something. And I think that's realistic. I think that coming in out with superhumans, that's a problem for me. And coming out with absolute people that have no dark side, I think that's wrong. I'm much more concerned about movies like Million Dollar Baby, where the culmination of the movie is that the woman who becomes quadriplegic after a boxing match begs her coach to pull the plug on her because life isn't worth living. And although he's come in with all kinds of options for her, he eventually gives in and pulls the plug. That's the kind of image you and I should be worried about, not that in blind justice.
This is Rachel, and I think one of the difficulties here is that we are all looking at this, generally speaking, through the perspective of a blind person. And we all know that there are blind people out there who are maladjusted. But going back to that Archie Bunker example earlier, it's a little easier to deal with the Archie Bunker example because, as you said, everybody knows somebody from Brooklyn and they know what is realistic and what is not. And when you're looking at a situation like what we have here with blind justice, where in many cases, as terrible as it is, this is the only experience or only exposure to blind people that a lot of the people watching this have. So it makes it really difficult. There are certainly things in the show that are realistic, and as Brian says, there are certainly things that go both ways as far as the superhero thing. That really bugs me. But I definitely see Paul's point, too, that we also don't want to be portrayed as just very maladjusted and very negative because we have worked so hard for, to be able to fit in with the public in that. So it's a really difficult situation.
And Brian, I would argue, for what it's worth, and you're right, we just flat out disagree. I would argue that the fact that it was a dog in the backyard doesn't change for a moment the fact that this person was displaying, and I quote, superhuman powers that weren't very realistic. And if the dog was in fact buried quite a long time ago, which it was, I submit to you that there would be no smell, and that for that reason it was unrealistic as well.
This is Jesus. I don't really see the difference between whether it was a dog, a cat, or a human. The fact of the matter is that he's smelling, he's doing something that, quote-unquote, a sighted person, because he doesn't have to use his other senses, would supposedly not be able to do.
I'm reading a book right now by Robert Ludlum called The Tristan Betrayal, and there is a Nazi officer who, throughout this book, and keep in mind that Robert Ludlum has a lot of followers, is considered to be quite a good writer, has this gentleman who has utilized his sense of smell as a detective element, so to speak, as a Nazi investigator. The guy's sighted. So is there something wrong to have a blind guy who actually pays attention to what he smells as opposed to what he sees? I don't buy that. I really don't buy that. There's a lot of blind people that have been portrayed in the movies and television over the years. I was more concerned about the attitude of the guy in The Scent of a Woman than I am about this guy. I was more concerned about Longstreet, who used the guide dog and the cane simultaneously, than I am this guy. And we survived all of those somehow.
The Son of a Woman, I like The Son of a Woman, but I think that in some ways that was more negative than this one. That guy, I mean, really had some problems with adjusting to blindness there. I mean, this one isn't quite so bad, but I think I enjoyed watching that movie, but it was kind of, I thought it was kind of depressing in that respect, but that's just, my two cents.
Gosh, Brian, we are destined to disagree, because I certainly don't have nearly as many problems with Scent of a Woman as I have with this series. Let's broaden our discussion a little bit. We've talked about Longstreet, we've talked about Mr. Sunshine, we've talked about a number of movies, Scent of a Woman and some others, and certainly the portrayal of people with disabilities in the media has shifted, I think, and is a little bit more three-dimensional than it used to be. If we go back to movies like Heidi, or if we go back to a number of movies made in the 30s and 40s where when an individual was blinded, the wife simply walked out the door or sort of, handed him the tin cup and said, "Darling, I'll be with you for the rest of my life, and it's okay that you're a beggar. It's fine." I think we are perhaps more three-dimensional than that. Are we making progress? And are there some other things that perhaps give evidence of that?
This is Jesus. maybe stepping away from the video mediums for a second, from TV and movies, I would make the argument that at least in literature, and particularly for anybody who is a science fiction reader, I have run into certain authors who, in my opinion, have done an incredible job over the last 20 years, not in just one book, but in series of books, in doing a hell of a good job at what I consider to be a much more realistic, much better balanced portrayal of disabled individuals in general.
This is Alice, and I would say, Paul, I think we have. I think it's gotten a little better. In particular, what I was thinking about is a couple of years ago, I'm telling myself here, on Port Charles, they had a gentleman who was in a wheelchair. And I thought the portrayal of him was very good. I thought it was very realistic. And they actually talked about some of the stuff like the truly is technology that's out there today. And I was impressed by that. And then on another soap, The Young and the Restless, they had a woman on there who portrayed a blind man. She was probably more closer to truly being portrayed of what it was really like than in past on soap operas, because, you know, before it was all miracle, we get our vision back, so on and so forth. And the other thing I remember about it at the time was she got pregnant during the soap, and it was truly interesting to me, because that still irritated me with the way they went with it, about how she shouldn't have this baby because she was blind. What an awful thing. Now, and she did, by the way, have the baby. But so I would say that, yeah, I think it, you know, things are better. I still think we probably have a ways to go, especially if you listen to the media and the news things with what's going on today now anyway. So, but I definitely think, you know, that there have been strides to try to make it more realistic.
The minute I think things are getting better, they get worse. So it's difficult for me. Again, I have a serious problem with movies getting the attention that they do, like Million Dollar Baby, where the only way to deal with disability is to kill myself. You may recall, by the way, Paul, in Scent of a Woman, he was intending to shoot himself in that movie as well, because being a person with a disability is so absolutely horrible in those kind of things. And Hollywood seems to soak up that kind of attitude about disability. It's too horrible. If you're really going to be realistic, you kill yourself. So I don't think that things are by any means all goodness and light in terms of how the media portrays people with disabilities. I think there's some serious problems. But for every bad situation, I think that there's a good one that's balancing it off. And all in all, I think that the portrayals are becoming more realistic rather than less. And I think, but I also happen to be one of those people who thinks that you don't convince people about the abilities of disabled people in mass media. Everyone I've ever talked to who I felt really got it about what it's like to be a disabled person and how regular of a person you can be with a disability have all done so, come to that conclusion, because of being personally connected with, in some fashion, a person with a disability. It's almost always been done as a result of a personal connection.
I would agree with that. I don't think with mass media you're ever going to be able to convince people of the reality. But again, I would stress to say that there seems to be a major gap between what is in writing, what is literature out there, and what seems to be being done in the video mediums. And unfortunately, most people are still, or probably always will be, more apt to watch a TV show or a movie than read a book.
Hey, Seuss, just so people understand where you're coming from. I'm assuming that you're talking about Lois McMaster Bujold in terms of at least one of the folks that you're talking about in her series about Miles Vorkosigan. And are you perhaps talking about maybe Joe Haldeman and some of the stuff that he's written? Tell us of others if in fact you want to.
Big 10-4. Yeah, those two certainly come to mind. The other one that comes to mind is Jeffrey Deaver. I don't remember the detective right now, but the Bone Collector, the Confidencer. That detective is a quadriplegic, severe quadriplegic from the neck down. And Paul has usually a better memory for certain details vis-a-vis author and name of series. But yes, the two that Paul mentioned are certainly would be at the top of my list, and the one I just mentioned, the author I just mentioned, would be another one.
Another indication that things are getting better is the degree to which we're actually seeing people with disabilities portrayed in advertisements in some pretty positive ways. There have been some blind folks who have been portrayed pretty well. One question that I'd like people's opinion on is why is it that there is no such thing as a blind person who is capable of playing a blind person, if you exclude Tom Sullivan, and I happily will. But for the most part, when you make a movie about blind folks, you have a sighted person who plays that person. On the other hand, when you make a movie about deaf folks, you have Marley Matson or some other person who's deaf who plays the role. Any thoughts?
I wonder if it has to do with how many blind people are out there trying to be actors and actresses. I only know one, that would be Cheryl McMaster. Maybe there are others, but it's not a profession that I think a lot of people gravitate toward, and I think that might be one of the issues.
That's a good point. I don't know of anyone, and I graduated from a university that's supposedly known to have one of the best theater departments in the country. And in the 5 years that I was there, I never knew anyone, even partially sighted, to be enrolled in the department. I've never known anybody who has ever gone in for a drama career who is blind or visually impaired.
ACB a few years ago had a whole blind theater company come. These folks were actually pretty capable as actors. They're out there. They're members of the union. The truth is that I don't think there is any perception in Hollywood that a blind person can do it, and therefore they're not even asked. And I guess that's my concern. And it's part of what I'm talking about with this program, Brian and Alice. For my money, what we're dealing with here is just another example, more egregious for me than it is perhaps for some of you, of Hollywood assuming that they know all about blind people. When you do get a chance, both of you, to listen to the audio description surrounding the guide dog element, I think you'll get a better idea of one of the reasons that I'm concerned. Because it wasn't even... There was really no good portrayal of a dog guide person team. Essentially, he just stepped out into the street with no regard to what his dog was saying or wasn't saying, made no effort to communicate with his dog, and what happened is the dog ran away to the other side of the street, and so he was groping around and unable to find his dog, and other people came up to help him, and he essentially said, "I don't need your help," and eventually the dog comes back. So, I mean, that was essentially about what happened in that portrayal.
Well, I'm glad you enlightened me about that. I wondered what happened. And I guess, yeah, that bothers me a little bit. And I guess then I'm a little confused, because my understanding was from some articles and stuff that I read was that they were actually getting some guidance from the school, the guide dog school out there in California, for the portrayal of that.
I hope that the story is worth the telling and is worth the listening, because regardless of what a good portrayal they do or poor portrayal they do, if the story isn't worth the listen, then the show is going to be gone and you know, it's going to be null and void. I mean, the books that I was mentioning earlier were in my opinion great books, not because one of the characters or the main character, the protagonist, was a disabled person, but just because the story was a damn good story. And I hope that's the case here, and whenever we look at one of these shows or movies or books or whatever and make our comments, that in my opinion the first thing to keep in mind is the story good or not.
Well, it sounds like it's starting up on my TV in my living room, so I'm going to go watch the next episode. I would say that I'm a guide dog user of many years, and my dog makes errors, and occasionally I make errors, and I know that when you're going to go about disciplining the dog for an error that's been made, if you have any idea that in fact the error was yours and not the dog, it would be a miscarriage of justice to correct the dog. I think there might be some truth also to the idea that television is very, very uncomfortable with the idea of disciplining animals in any fashion, whether it's a horse, a dog, or whatever. There are all kinds of rules dealing with what you can or cannot do with respect to an animal on TV or in the movies, and that may have played a part in this. I did sit at dinner the other day with the gentleman that runs the guide dog school that's acting as the advisor for this particular show, but I wouldn't blame it on bad advice, anything that you see in that respect, because I also know the guy that did the advising for Longstreet, and he was just beside himself with some of the advice that he gave that wasn't incorporated in doing some of it, just as a matter of expedience on the part of the writer of the show, however, which film ended up getting into the show versus which ended up on the cutting room floor. I'm going to say goodbye now. Go watch myself another stereotypic episode.
Even if they're getting technical assistance or whatever from the school, there's no guarantee what they say will be used. And you're also right on don't treat animals cruelly. I mean, again, it brings us back to, Lord, don't mistreat an animal, but what we do to people, that's okay and a different story. But that's another subject, and I won't go there.
I don't ever remember hearing this guy issue appropriate commands to his guide dog, like forward, left, right, stay, or any of the kinds of commands that are absolutely at the core of how a guide dog team operates. And I'm wondering if you guys actually heard those commands.
This is Rachel, and about the only thing I remember hearing in the first episode was a sit, and that's about it. I don't remember hearing any of the other commands you talk about. And just while I have the floor, I did go check on that website, and the website is real-eyes.org. It's REAL-EYES.ORG.
And for in case folks are wondering why we're raising this site, that is a site that that does allow you after the episode has been aired to download a copy of the audio described version so that you can listen to it at your leisure. By the way, does anybody find it significant that the audio description is being sponsored by Window Eyes? Just out of curiosity, does that have any ramifications that we ought to think about?
Well, it's quite significant. I noticed that with last night. I mean, I guess it would probably be a good thing that that a company like W Micro is willing to sponsor the program and things of that nature.
I'd rather see audio description be sponsored by big business corporations that everyday things, just like they do for the closed captioning and stuff. But at the same time, I kind of think that's good that UW Micro would get, you know, some advertisement that way.
And I do believe, if I understand correctly, that they are equal opportunity sponsors there, that I believe Freedom Scientific has provided some of the equipment that will be used for him during the show, any of the computer equipment or note takers or whatever.
I think he did mention, Rachel, when you said that, I think last week when he was talking about, or the first episode before that, when he was talking about how he'd do his job, I think you're right. I think he mentioned Freedom Scientific as far as the jaws on his computer.
I think we are actually coming towards the end of our discussion tonight. I think it's been interesting. The discussion has really surprised me because I guess I had expected to see a good deal more discomfort than I saw with the portrayal. I think that 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 years ago, organizations of the blind would have been far more distraught over some of the characterizations that are going on in this program. And I'm fascinated to try to explore precisely why that is. I'm not sure what the answer is, but it certainly does fascinate me. I think it's clear that there are still issues about the way that folks are portrayed in the media. And I think that the way that the media portrays folks with disabilities is actually very important. I do not believe, with Brian, that people are not affected by the media in terms of the way that they develop and implement notions of disability. And in fact, I think that whether it's subconscious or not, most of the attitudes that society has about people who are disabled are created by the media and by other stereotypes that are out there. So let's go around once more for a final time to see if folks have final thoughts on this topic. I think it has been fascinating, and it will be interesting to see if what we've said tonight will in fact spark some more discussion on some of the lists. So final thoughts on the subject of disability in the media.
Well, I think there's no question at all that media has a huge influence on how people think about not just disability, but everything. For example, does anyone remember the AT&T commercial about reach out and touch someone? Have you noticed that the mother or son will tell each other, I love you, father and daughter, but when it comes to father and son, the father would say, they're not working you too hard, are they? And the son would say, nah, Dad. You never heard a father and son say, I love you.
This is Rachel, and I'm going to expand on the comment that Larry just made here in the room. He's had some mic troubles, so I'll relay the comment, and then I'll make my own comments on that. What he said, and I kind of agree with him, is that, you know, maybe the reason why we as blind people aren't more upset about this kind of thing is that we're kind of used to it happening, and that it's just, we just kind of figure that, well, that's the way it is, that's the way blind people are going to be portrayed in the media. And my thought on that too is he probably has a point. And if you look at that in comparison to maybe the way blind people sometimes handle other situations, like, I don't know, employment, where we could say, well, you know, it's difficult to get employment, so, you know, maybe in general, blind people, we tend to sit back a little more than we should and just say, well, I guess that's the way it is, you know, can't do anything about it. And maybe that's partly where we might be coming from to a degree on this one.
This is Alice, and I would just echo like what Rachel's saying. I think it's because we are so used to it. I mean, think about it. Even in real life press stories, things that are happening out there, the way the media portrays us, it hasn't changed. So why would we be surprised about a TV show? And maybe the reason, Paul, that we aren't saying much at all is because it's just even a wonderful, shocking idea that they would even do a program where one of the characters be blind, quote unquote. So maybe that's part of it. Just the fact that we're, you know, it's hard to believe they would even actually put it out there and have a main character that have to have a disability. That's kind of how I see it. I mean, I was really just thrilled to hear that it was about a blind person, and that's what kind of hooked me into watching. And again, like I said, my other point being, and I know you keep going back to this, you can tell what my mind's been on a lot lately, but it's that whole concept. Think about the media and how they think and what they think about people with disabilities and how they relate stories, real life stories in the media today. It shouldn't surprise us at all about what they would do then in an actual fictional story on TV.
I think the people, blind people, were more upset about something like this 10 years ago, and now maybe I think a lot of us feel that it's great that they even have a program about a blind person on TV today, and it makes sense. I mean, we just kind of enjoy it. And some of the lists I've read, it seems like everybody seems to be positive about the whole thing, nothing but praise about it. There is the parts that Paul mentioned. I think I've checked. I mean, I found that to be true about the adjustment to blindness thing and that I suppose that's the way it would be with any show. Like I thought the depressing part about the Son of a Woman was about this guy going to take a gun and blow his brains out or whatever because he was blind, you know. As the characters grow, it probably will be better, but I think it's a good program.
I still find it fascinating because essentially we are, at least to a degree in my opinion, conniving at the very kind of situation that allows the movie that Brian hates to be perpetrated by remaining silent when stereotypes that misrepresent us happen. And I guess I would ask whether feminists would put up with really inappropriate portrayals of women. I wonder whether black folks would put up with a stereotypical portrayal of folks who are black. And my view is that for the most part they would not, on the grounds that they work pretty hard to create different notions in the media and to demand that that folks be portrayed differently in the media. And it seems to me that unless we're doing that, we're essentially acquiescing in the notion that the culture of disability is not nearly so important to us as it appears to have been 10 or 15 years ago. And as I say, I find that fascinating. And I don't know that Rachel's explanation gets it for me because I would hate to think that all of us are at the place where essentially we are prepared to give up fighting for appropriate portrayals of us as people with disabilities simply because it's happening a lot. That would say awful things about us and about the degree to which the culture of blindness or the culture of disability is even important to us. I'd like to thank everybody for joining us this evening and for discussing, I think, a very timely topic. On behalf of Tuesday Topics, this is Paul Edwards saying thanks very much for tuning in. Good night. Are blind people today more or less motivated than blind people were 10, 20, or 30 years ago? How do we motivate people who are blind? What works and what doesn't? Are blind people more apathetic now than they used to be? Is it harder to get blind people to do anything? If it is, why is it? And what can we do to change it? These are some of the questions that we will explore next week on Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.